WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The Senate trial of the president is nearing its conclusion, and satirist Harry Shearer is wondering why some people hate Bill Clinton and why everyone else has had to watch. He has some theories, which he offers in his new book, It's the Stupidity Stupid. Shearer's political satires are heard on his public radio program, Le Show. He does many of the voices on The Simpsons and co-created and co-starred in the heavy metal parody, This is Spinal Tap. He's played obnoxious TV news guys in The Truman Show and Godzilla. Like many of us, he watched the Senate trial on Saturday, which included excerpts of depositions from Vernon Jordan, Sidney Blumenthal, and Monica Lewinsky. I asked Shearer if the depositions changed his opinion of anyone.
I guess the conventional wisdom about from people outside Southern California is that they realize that Monica Lewinsky is less of a Valley girl than they thought. She was never a Valley girl. She was always a Beverly Hills lady, young lady. And those of us in Southern California can tell the difference. Otherwise, no, I don't think, you know, I'm in love with all reality. And so just the idea of being able to see them in deposition, especially in that crazy setting where the voice of the interrogator is always an off-screen presence, I can watch that stuff for hours. Yeah, you know, I'd sit and watch the whole of everybody's deposition.
Is there a question you would have liked to have asked Monica?
No, I thought Ed Bryant did a fine job of getting bollocksed up. I mean, the idea that this woman who had testified 22 times and had the two best lawyers in Washington, D.C. On her payroll, or her on theirs, it's hard to tell, that she would have come into a deposition and to listen to the remarks of Bryant and the other House managers afterwards. They were surprised that she was prepared and was careful and was not forthcoming. Well, you know, I've been in depositions. You're not there to offer things. It's not a swap meet. You're there to carefully answer questions, and the more carefully, the better. So, I wouldn't have asked her anything because I know what I would have gotten, whatever Mr. Kacharis and Stein wanted me to get.
Well, Harry, your new book is called It's the Stupidity Stupid, Why Some People Hate Clinton and Why the Rest of Us Have to Watch. Who do you think hates Clinton the most?
Well, Henry Hyde has learned through this process to hate Clinton. Not to, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. I think in writing the book, I was fascinated by the idea of hating Clinton, first of all, Terry. As political figures go, he doesn't stand, and I say this neither as a fan nor as a critic, but just as an observer, he doesn't stand for all that much that you can nail down from one month to the next. So for him to be particularly the object of hatred was initially and secondarily, too, kind of puzzling to me. Certainly conservative, Christian conservatives have been able over time to whip up a fine froth of hatred for him and to see him as the avatar of the moral decline of America. I think, frankly, behind the facade of solidity and defense, a lot of Democrats hate him, too.
Do you think the Democrats hate him for different reasons than the House managers hate him?
Oh, yeah. Any Democrat who cares about winning elections has to be concerned that during the length of the Clinton presidency up to now, more Republicans are sitting in more elective offices than were when Clinton came in. That may change in 2000. I do think I was in Washington last week, and I do think the loudest noise in Washington right now is Republicans whistling through the graveyard of, voters aren't going to remember this. You know, that bell has been clanging real close to our ears for the last 15 months. I don't think the ringing stops right away.
You point out in your book that, you know, Clinton is a Southerner, and yet some of the people who hate him the most are Southerners. Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think, you know, to give away the absolute climax of the book, such as it is, that he's regarded or can be regarded by those who were so inclined as a traitor to his sex, his race, and his class, all of which are taken very seriously down south. And I think that those are the issues on which they are extremely unforgiving.
In what sense do you think he's perceived as a traitor to his race, sex, and class?
Well, you know, here's a guy from a poor, broken family in Arkansas who ends up hanging out in Malibu and the Hamptons and would have been vacationing in Martha's Vineyard in 1995 if Dick Morris hadn't said, you know, that you should go someplace more proletarian for your vacation, sir. So he went backpacking with Hillary in Jackson Hole, Wyoming instead until he got past the 96 election. And then, of course, he's been vacationing in Martha's Vineyard again. So although he maintains his roots in terms of his taste in food and, I should say, women, he's aspirationally upscale in every other aspect of his life. And I do think that's seen as sort of a traitor to his class. That's the least of his violations as they see it, of course. The most serious is the fact that, as we've seen, one of his best friends is African-American. If the House managers hadn't had a sudden, I think, bout of public relations consciousness, two of the three witnesses on the witness list for depositions would have been African-American. He's a white Southerner who has talked probably more feelingly than any other American president about the still simmering race problem in this country. Even though he hasn't done anything about it, he still talks a fairly good game about it. And I think that has earned him some negative brownie points with the haters.
So how much do you think the trial of Bill Clinton relates to the culture wars?
Well, I think it's peculiar that he stands as a symbol of the 60s. You know, he's a sort of a halfway drug taker, you know, who's standing in for the empty-eyed acid heads on Haight-Ashbury. He's a halfway draft dodger. He made sure that his political viability was intact. You know, he was definitely not burning his draft card on the steps of the Pentagon. And as we've learned, his idea of free love is definitely equivocal as well, you know, making sure that the door is a crack open. Frankly, Terry, if he'd been a woman during the 60s, he would have burned half his bra. So it's peculiar that he now stands as a symbol for all of that, you know, the most careful and calculated of the statistical cohort stands for a generation which believed in less calculation and less conniving, supposedly.
Hillary Clinton's popularity seems to have really been boosted by the White House scandal and by the subsequent trial. Mm-hmm. And what's your theory about why that's so?
Americans still like their women as victims. Word to the wise, Terry.
I'm working on it, Harry.
Okay. No, I mean, I think it's that. I also think it's that when you gain prominence in the public, it's very hard to change the first impression. The first impression the American people had of Hillary Clinton was from the 60 Minutes, where she was a victim. She was a strong and proud victim, but she was a victim nonetheless. She was defending her husband because he had cheated. And she then revealed, oh, I'm not that person at all. I'm a person who holds secret meetings to change healthcare. And that, I think it's the combination of the change itself and the change to strength that accounted for the plummeting of her image. And so, in a way, it's both the fact that she's returning to the way we first knew her and returning to a pattern which, like it or not, is still the approved pattern for prominent women in this culture. I think she'll always be really much more popular as a victim than as a strong actor.
My guest is satirist Harry Shearer. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is satirist Harry Shearer. His new book is called It's the Stupidity Stupid, Why Some People Hate Bill Clinton and Why the Rest of Us Have Had to Watch. Say you were in the Senate, how would you be voting?
Well, first of all, I would have voted for, let the House call all the witnesses they want. We can save Social Security in October. I would have voted for the longest imaginable trial just because you know, I think entertainment value is the main value in American society, and why try to flee from it? And you know what amazes I would vote for closed deliberations only because open deliberations would be a total sham. There would be open fake deliberations, and there would still be real deliberations in private. I loved Senator Bob Bennett yesterday on one of the talk shows. He is not the Bob Bennett who defended the president. The Washington is apparently full of fascinating and wonderful Bob Bennetts. But this is the ex-intelligence officer, Bob Bennett, and he was arguing in behalf of closed hearings because he said, you know, the one closed meeting that the senators had where they decided the form of the trial was so wonderful. Trent Lott told these wonderful jokes, and we had such great camaraderie. So the great new excuse for government secrecy is camaraderie.
who do you think has been the most baffling figure during the Senate trial? Whose words or behavior has confused you the most?
Well, Robert Byrd, I would say, who 1 week was for early dismissal of the entire proceedings, and this past weekend said it does rise to, of course, our favorite modern cliche, rise to the level. This does rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. I think he's taken senatorial befuddlement to a high new level. I think also Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, during the House Judiciary Committee hearings, and a little bit even in the Senate, although he's had to put on a more determined face. But Lindsey Graham, to me, came the closest to at least the simulation of thought and cognition during this whole process. It seemed to me he was kind of working out what he felt and thought while we watched. And I think the turning point, although God knows what they looked at when Tom DeLay invited the House members into the secret evidence room to look at the secret evidence that helped them vote for impeachment in the first place. We still don't know the answer to that. But one senses that what really motivated Lindsey Graham was when he saw what he found to be the meanness of what he interprets to be a Clinton campaign to smear Monica Lewinsky, that turned him more than the pure legalities of it. But I think he's been fascinating to watch.
What do you think changed his mind from the early days of the House investigation when he was saying, well, I have to figure out whether this is Watergate or
Peyton
Place?
Yeah. Well, I do think it was the meanness. I think he perceived that Clinton via Sidney Blumenthal and or others was really trying. What interests me about what Clinton told Sidney Blumenthal, incidentally, is that every single thing he told Sidney Blumenthal was true. It wasn't the truth, but Monica Lewinsky had told Linda Tripp that her co-workers called her the stalker. She did make a sexual demand on Clinton. She wanted real sex as opposed to this halfway house stuff. And he said, I can't do that. So he did rebuff her. Everything he said was true. He could, in his own mind, justify every single word he said to Sidney Blumenthal. It just, when you put it together, did not add up to a truthful picture. And I think the backing away from the fervid partisanship on both sides of this, that's going to be the overall memory I have of this spectacle, is that everybody had a part of the truth. And that the overarching stupidity of so many of the chief actors at so many key moments is what made this thing lurch forward over and over again. You know, there were so many moments where a sane and halfway intelligent person could have gotten out of this on either side. But it is true that so much of, you know, what Clinton's rationale to himself, I think, is that every specific thing that he said was, you could find a truthful antecedent for it.
Harry,
that's a kind of truth.
Have you ever met Bill Clinton?
No, I met George Bush at a Christmas party at the White House, and I can still remember what he said to me.
What?
Hey, Merry Christmas to you. But I've never met Bill Clinton.
He said that to you? Wow.
He said that to me.
So is it
cherish,
is it just
I
as well?
I cherish those words.
Is it just as well? Do you think that you haven't met Bill Clinton that way? You could kind of say what you want to say without feeling like you know the guy and he was nice
absolutely.
To you and you're
absolutely.
Hurting his feelings.
Absolutely, and it's one reason why I don't like to go to Washington all that often. It's one reason why I never liked when I was at Saturday Night Live having the targets of satire show up as special guests.
Mm-hmm.
I always think that, you know, then you're faced with two bad choices, either being incredibly rude to somebody to his face or starting to pull your punches. I prefer to, you know, get people behind their backs.
Satirist Harry Shearer. He's the author of the new book, It's the Stupidity Stupid, Why Some People Hate Bill Clinton and Why the Rest of Us Have Had to Watch.